Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios at the City Deck Landing in Green Bay and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
All right, welcome back to Hour 2, Mino and the Mayor. We've had two great guests on, kind of talking about what's going on at the Children's Museum. And, of course, it's National Cereal Day, so we're asking people to text in their favorite cereal.
But it can't be Kashi because the mayor will not allow you to choose Kashi.
Not Kashi, that was Mino's. All the great things that happen, something that we can all relate to in some way, shape, or form are our movies. And we've got the film festival that takes place here in our community. It's open to anybody. We have listeners in Appleton and Oshkosh.
Absolutely.
You guys are great about inviting people. But we've got two of the leaders of that, Nicholas Wattier and Caitlin Schuchart.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
So welcome. You've both been involved in a little closer to the mic. You've both been involved in films and movies for some time. I was reading about the different varieties that you have there. So what do you have coming up next? What do you have? You had something in February. What was that about?
We started the festival with our Wisconsin Zone. We felt like that's the best way to start and end the festival, kind of a big boom. They're our bread and butter, our Wisconsin artists, so we want to support them most definitely. And coming up March 9th, we have Indigenous Stories. So we've got a whole bunch of different kinds, lots of documentaries, an animated film. So I think it's going to be a lot of different kinds of stories.
So, Nick, when people submit, anybody can submit a film, or what's the process?
Yeah, absolutely.
So everybody has like a passion to be, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not everybody, but a lot of people would like to be in the film industry or be a producer, publisher.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, there's links on our website to get there, gbfilmfestival.org, but you could also find us on Film Freeway. We partner with this organization, and really they're kind of the place to go for independent filmmakers. And you can upload your film there and submit to a whole bunch of different festivals. We're one of the listed festivals. We then have a process of having screeners go through and watch everything that's submitted. And I mean, when I say everything, sometimes it's 300-400 films that our team will go through in a year to try and filter out and find the best of the best and bring it to our community to, you know, allow our local audiences to see what's out there.
And I think it's pretty cool because you think maybe these filmmakers, film producers are a little bit older. You have some youth that have, I've been to that many times. You used to have that at the Radisson before you moved it to the Tarleton.
And, absolutely.
I remember going to see some of these films. I'm like, wow, I mean, these are high school kids that put together.
Yeah. Well, so in our fall session, I forget exactly which event it is, but one of our fall sessions, we're going to have a film made right here in Green Bay by the Boys and Girls Club team. Wow. Their instructor, Craig Knitt, has been a great partner with us. He runs the Wildwood Film Festival. And every time that we do, you know, a youth-focused event, he comes through with a great project from students. And yeah, I mean, for us, we've always been focusing on trying to build an audience that's willing to, for lack of a better term, take a risk and go see something that doesn't have Tom Cruise on the banner.
Right.
You know, I mean, independent film can be so great and you can tell so many stories that video film allows an emotional connection unlike any other.
If I can jump in, Nick, I'm sorry, I had to run and grab a book for a guy that's coming in. But anyway, two of the greatest films, whatever you want to call it, I've ever seen were both independent. One was a film from this girl from the lady from the UP who followed these four soldiers from a small town in the UP to Afghanistan. It was called Where Soldiers Come From.
Oh, absolutely.
Mind-boggling good. And the other one is the one that I hosted for you a few years back. And it's funny, something popped up on my Facebook like yesterday, you know, 6 years ago today or whenever it was. And it was the one about these Samoan kids in Utah.
Mm.
Where football was such a big part of their heritage and their life. It was incredible. But gangs were also such a big part of their lives.
Yeah.
And not to give it away, but this one kid, I mean, these kids are being recruited by Southern Cal and UCLA and all the big schools. And the one kid pulled a gun on somebody and went to prison for 6 years. And that's where his life kind of. So, but the funny part is, Nick, I've followed those kids then, since then.
Oh, really?
And the one, the great running back was like one of the big stories. They switched him to defense, and he had some tryouts with the New England Patriots, but then got in a car accident and like broke his back. So I've always wondered what happened to that kid. But we had Mark Murphy there. We had the coaches there. What a great film. I can't remember the name of it. Yeah. For the love
of football.
Escapes
me. That's probably 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah, but it was so good, Jim. You can't believe it.
I think I saw that. They showed that at this festival, right? Yeah,
yes.
Mark Murphy, I was there for that.
Oh, you were there and I hosted the thing then, the question and answer.
I don't remember that part, but no, I do. John. I'm just kidding. I thought John was going to jump in because you said you don't have the Tom Cruise, but he would like to get the John Minow. Yeah. So how does he get in a film?
Absolutely.
Caitlin, tell us a little bit about the Indigenous. That's your next festival that's coming up, the next series. And what is that? That's March. That's this weekend.
That's this weekend. Saturday. Yes.
Okay. It's like $20.
It's $20. You get to stay the whole day. We have two sessions, a 4 o'clock and a 7 o'clock, different films. You know, $20 gets you light appetizers. It gets you a cozy film community. It gets you an awesome spot at the Tarleton, first come, first serve.
And networking opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure you guys got a pretty...
Yep, we've got some filmmakers coming.
Right.
This local... session, we actually have the people who worked on the soundtrack, which I think is really fun and pretty different. We usually just have like the director or producer, but this time they're sending the people who worked on the soundtrack. So we always get somebody within the industry to kind of give us a different look at.
And these films that we're going to be seeing, this Indigenous series, local or all over, or what? I saw some of them are 2 minutes, which I could watch those, and some are hour and 55 minutes, which I guess I could, but.
They're from all over.
They
lot of the, it's a lot of the organizations like On Native Ground, which is Indigenous Media Corporation. Unfortunately, it's not just Oneida. Well, I shouldn't say unfortunately. It's from all
over.
That's
good, though. People
want to
see.
Lots of Indigenous stories from all over the country.
Well, and that's one of the things that I like to point out, too, is we've traditionally, as a festival, focused on bringing the viewpoints, bringing the world to Green Bay. Right. We want to create an experience here that is culturally enriching and tells stories that you can't see in other ways.
Right.
So, some of those stories. I mean, we played a lot of great documentaries. I think that was the same year John was there. We played one from Iraq, showing what it actually was like to live in the refugee camps.
Yeah.
And would not see that story any other way.
I was just going to say that so many of your films, I would guess the majority, you wouldn't see that anywhere else.
Right.
And that's why they're the independent venues.
And another thing, though, like the one about where soldiers come from and the football one I watch, I mean, those were years in the making.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you whittle it down to 2 hours maybe or something, but you're talking years of shooting.
Well, you would have loved to see, we just wrapped on a film and premiered it last month called Honor in the Air. You may be familiar with the name Scott Alwyn. He was a helicopter pilot and a producer out of mid-Wisconsin, actually ran through our fiscal sponsorship program to produce a documentary. And we just finished that project, and it's just unbelievable storytelling about, you know, and the listeners may not know, Scott Alwyn is the most decorated helicopter pilot in history from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So.
But I think that story took her at least 5 years.
Oh, yeah. That's what I mean. Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the work that goes into these is pretty amazing.
And that's why we want to showcase it, right? We
Absolutely.
Know that they put their time, their money, their friends,
Absolutely.
Their family,
Absolutely.
Their neighbors,
Absolutely.
You know, and it deserves to be seen in front of an audience.
It's great.
And this is open to anyone.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you can get tickets online on our website, or you can show up at the door. You know, I'll be there taking cash or check or charge.
Jim's the last guy with a checkbook in Green Bay.
Hey, I still cut checks for all the expenses. I'm the treasurer.
There you go. All good. But people family friendly?
Yeah.
I mean, I think $20 is like not a lot of money, right? I mean,
yes.
I don't
want to
discount $20, but for what you get to see what, 4 films or something?
I think we have 6.
We got 6?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, the way we think about it really is a 2-hour programming session.
Right.
And we're doing 2 sessions of 2 hours for that $20 ticket. So, and this is a major shift compared to most festivals that just want to squeeze everything into one weekend. We kind of went, look, there's burnout. You're not going to be able to see everything if we do multiple screens at the theater. Let's just, you know, split it up, give our volunteers, because we're all volunteer. No one in our organization gets paid. We're a 501c3. So we try to find these, I like to call them vaguely specific themes. like last year we did an event called Playing with Sound. any movie could have something with sound that's unique. It could be the soundtrack, it could be the editing, could be the special effects. There's all kinds of ways to fit into that category. But for the audience that came, they had this interesting target that they're not going to go see at the commercial cinema down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we had a few 15-minute pieces. We had an hour-long piece. We even did some kind of experimental piece where we played one of the films silent and I DJ'd on top of it.
Really? Oh, cool.
a silent like disco, it. Yeah.
You really can bring out the creative juices in filmmaking.
Exactly.
Right? You know, and that's, I think that's important that, well, I think sometimes we think it is what it is. And you guys allow, especially students, to mm-hmm. really think outside the box.
Experimental. What are you, if I've asked this technical question, what do they shoot on generally these days?
Man, digital. It depends. Okay. I mean, a lot of the shorts that we see are being shot on iPhone.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Or you know, don't have to be specifically Apple product. But
right.
Then we do see some of our higher low budget projects. A lot are shooting with the Blackmagic Ursa cameras. We see some with prosumer digital cameras. It's a potpourri, really. I think that the big message, though, is it doesn't matter what your equipment is mm-hmm. if you've got the right story.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Right. And totally I want to say, Nick, that I don't want to scare people away to some of those other things you were mentioning. It's amazing what you can do on a phone.
Absolutely. I don't know if anyone here saw Gags that was shot downtown on City Deck. We played that, and yeah, the whole thing was shot on phones.
Right. Yeah, that was very cool. It was the marketing on that I thought was awesome.
Oh, but, yeah.
You know,
Did they talk to you about that in advance at all? Did City Hall know?
No. But did we get the calls, though, Nick?
I believe it.
Gags. It's like, what the hell? And then I get these phone calls. You remember that, you guys? The guy with the clown with the... Okay. And that was
they were
just,
like tying balloons to the sewer
right.
grates?
Yeah. That was just very cool. And I teach a class on marketing, so I want to get Gags in there because I the film was great, but the marketing was...
We can get you in touch with those guys for sure.
Yes, absolutely. That's what it was. Caitlin, what's... March 9th, I know, is Indigenous... Then April, you followed up with what?
Female Perspectives. We've got a whole bunch of female-driven, female-casted, female-directed, female-written...
Really?
Of works. Yeah, I think I think we got some of the best submissions in Female Perspective, so I'm back in that one.
All right, we're going to learn a little bit more about that. Mind on the Mayor, we'll be right back. What will you do?
On the Mayor here on a good look at Thursday morning. Nicholas and Caitlin talk about the Green Bay Film Festival. Give it one more plug. Tell everybody what they can do this coming weekend.
Well, it's this Saturday at the Tarleton Theater, downtown Green Bay. You can get tickets on our website, gbfilmfestival.org. If you got questions, feel free to call us at 1-833-4-GB-FILM.
Okay, I just have to ask this. Have you guys seen the movie, what was the name of the movie when he was a prisoner?
Project Solitude?
Project Solitude.
Oh, yeah.
Aha! Did you hear how excited he was when he said that?
Well, Project Solitude was shot, again, locally, a local team.
Well, you know,
a lot of people
was in it.
Yeah, well, we ran it, was that 2 years ago, I think. It was the last year we were at St. Norbert College. We ran that film and tried to get as many of the people there from the film as we could.
Oh, man, I would have signed autographs.
He and Ace Champion were both there. They both played cons.
Yeah, I know. That was the best part. You were a prisoner.
I was, yes.
Well, I bet he ran that cell block, huh?
Right.
There's just so much we can... That's just a great evening. That's right. It was at the Radisson, then St. Norbert. Now you're at the Tarleton. That's right. And that's coming up March 9th. $20 to really see some films that you're not going to see anywhere else. And on top of that... meet some terrific people that are in love with that industry. So both Caitlin and Nick, you guys are great. Thank you for doing this for our community.
Hey, thanks for having us.
You know, you got Appleton and Oshkosh that are listening to us, and you know, they're all welcome.
Yeah, come on up. Yeah.
Tarleton even is really cool. They put a signature cocktail together for each one of these events. Oh. So for our Wisconsin one, it was, you know, an old-fashioned, a signature. That would be us. Always fun and different. Yeah, and that would be us.
And hey, you know what they got to do then? If they're doing old-fashioneds and they want to make it real Wisconsin, we got to bring in some of that, the drink that the guy brought us in
maple
the other day.
Maple syrup?
He does his own maple syrup.
Ooh. Oh,
and right infuses, out of the tree. Infuses rye whiskey with this and oranges.
Oh, my.
It is like such a...
We're pretty lit up.
What time was that? Yeah, was, how did we get invited?
Somebody said you guys should always drink during your third hour.
Yeah, that's why you're going to a third hour, right?
Right, exactly. That's what we had to. But it's not a big deal, but you also have free parking there and you got hors d'oeuvres. It's just
free parking downtown. We're including heavy hors d'oeuvres in the price. But if you want a full meal, the restaurant is open. Tarleton has a great menu, full bar if you want to have a drink. Right. It's a nice place to go spend a day.
How do you possibly get free parking? Our guy Todd here just got another $35 ticket.
They own the lot.
Todd,
yeah.
No.
They own the lot, but they're doing something with that lot too.
Are they?
Okay. We'll talk about that off air.
We'll do that. All right. Anyway, thank you for doing this. March 9th, the Green Bay Film Festival. Again, it's you're looking for something to do. There's a lot going on this weekend, but that is really something that should be on your list.
Come out with us. We get really into it. Cool.
Thank you for coming in. All right. This is great. All right. Thank you, Nicholas.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Caitlin.
See you soon.
That's great. Good. I still want to do one of those. I really want to make a movie. I really do. Jim, I really
want to be in a movie.
I'm going to make one, Jim. I won't be in it. I'm just going to make one.
I don't believe
it's true. That's what I was asking.
Did you hear Caitlin as she was walking out? She goes, making a movie is a whole nother can of worms. Everybody wants to be in a movie. Making a movie.
Hey, Caitlin. I was going to say, Hey, Caitlin. Yeah, I was going to say, keep the cup. Put the cup in the sink. She can get a T-shirt, though. Give her a T-shirt.
Oh, man. Anyway, yes.
That's good stuff, man. Like I said, that one that I did with the Samoan football players, I still think of it all the time. It was so well done, and it was so human. You know what I mean? That's just so human.
They're real. I mean, those independent films and, you know, I mean, let's be honest. A lot of those aren't going to make the big screen.
No.
So this is an opportunity for the producer and the
team. Well, a lot of them, I don't even know if they make up money-wise what was put into it.
No.
Because, like, the one where soldiers come from, it was big, though. I mean, it played in New York.
Oh, it did? Oh, okay. Wow.
It played all over the country. I mean, it was really, really a big thing. But it was just independently produced. I want to say this young lady that did it, I think her dad was a professor at Michigan Tech, and they got some funding through them or something like that. But it was like 3 years in the making. I mean, she was with them when they're at the National Guard Armory in Hancock before they got deployed. And then she was basically with them in Afghanistan. And they were doing road security engineering where they'd go out basically to try to find the IEDs. And they got hit. And one of the guys got a traumatic brain injury.
Really?
They had post-traumatic stress.
And they made that into a film that you saw.
It's a great film. It's called Where Soldiers Come From. If anybody can look that up, please do. Because it's spectacular. It really is. I would love to play that here in Green Bay. I don't know if they played at that film fest. But I'd love to get some of my Iraq and Afghanistan veterans to come and watch that.
Right. And the other thing, John, that she talked about in... these students that do films. Now, these are shorter films, some of them. But what you can do with an iPhone, and some girl did a film, and I was mayor, and she invited me, and we watched it at her house. Her parents were there, a little popcorn. And it was just a 3-4 minute film. But you know, the work they put into that, the thought they put into the story, it's just great exposure for them. So, I mean, this is a good event this weekend. I mean, we got a lot of basketball going on, too. But, man, to get away 7 o'clock Saturday night.
I mean, I've
night,
been there. I love it. Yeah. I really love it. Like I said, Mark Murphy, I talked to him at that one. They went to, like, all of them. They go to, like, all the movies. A lot of people are really into that.
You're right. Him and his wife are into that.
Yeah. I'd love to do something more with them. And I think that's great. I hope people can get on out there. And what a great center, too, as far as the being over at the Tarleton. What a great facility that is for something like this.
And they have 6 different events. Now, this one, you know, like we said, this weekend, March 9th, is Indigenous. That's kind of like the theme of it. But, I mean, for $20.
Yeah, you can't beat it.
Right?
You can't beat it.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, you can't beat
good
it.
Good seats.
Yep.
Free parking. Yep. So, anyway, I would encourage people to go. I think that's going to be a nice event Saturday
so
night.
So, Todd, can we talk about your dilemma real quick here?
What?
We need to, you're okay, Jim, you're good at getting out of tickets. We got to talk to Todd and help him out.
So what happened to me this morning is I actually got here a little early, Jim. Right. Normally I get here about 5:10 or so.
Yeah.
Got in this morning at 4:50. All right. And we park right outside the station. And I went out to let some guests in and I saw a ticket on my windshield and it's for $32. I got it at 4:55 this morning, 5 minutes after I parked there to do my job. And it's $32.
And you got it for overnight parking, and you did not park overnight.
You've been there 5 minutes.
5 minutes.
I was there 5 minutes.
And it's stamped?
It is stamped.
All right.
How do you compete with that? What do you do?
Steve Grenier.
Okay.
Remember, he was on our show. Yeah. He's your Uber guy.
He's my Uber guy.
That's weird, though. That
I park here every day.
I know you can't park overnight.
I know.
We all know that.
So can you not park at all overnight?
Like, what if I come in at 4:55?
Are we not allowed? People do that work overnight shifts?
I thought it was so, like, midnight to four is when we plow or something, so we don't want any cars on the road. But I don't know that they come around and try to make money.
I thought the meters go from 6 at night till 8 in the morning. I thought that's... when they're shut off, basically, so to speak, that they're only active 8 in the morning till 6 at night.
That's true. But
then
that's,
why should he get one then in the middle of the night?
Because he can't park overnight. I mean,
but he didn't park over. He's there for 5 minutes.
But the parking attendant thought he parked overnight.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's...
Wow, well, it's nice that you thought that, but he didn't.
That's my point, right? I mean, that's an assumption.
So what? Right. Did he assume that when he came down at 4? Who goes to work at 4:45?
Lots of people.
Except Todd Michaels.
I know lots and lots of people. Especially people in the media.
All right, I'll make you a deal. I will call the director of Public Works and parking, obviously reports to DPW, and I will find out what, tell you what, worst case, I'll pay for the ticket. But
I don't want you to pay
for it. I want to get Steve on here and explain for people who come early, right, why should they get a $32 ticket?
When the meters aren't activated.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure they thought Todd parked overnight.
Well, that's a big assumption.
That's a big assumption.
It is.
Right?
I'm telling you, I think that's the assumption.
Because
they made.
Guy assumed that, Todd should have to pay $32?
I don't know. I think this, I'm getting myself into a corner here. I'm going to get the director of DPW here to explain why, and I'll have him bring his magic wand.
Well, we got to do it before
3 days.
The 27th.
No, I'm going to call him right now. I'm going to call him during the break.
Okay. Awesome. Let's get him on.
I don't know if he's going to want to do that.
Why?
I'll call him during the break. Of course, right. It's 7:28. I mean,
okay.
It's government.
Wake him up.
Do you think he's in?
It's not Friday yet.
I'll call him.
We got to set a quick break. Mind on the Mayor. We got Dave Daniels talking about a great book when we come back.
Awesome.
Take Mino and the Mayor with you anywhere. Download the Civic Media app today from the Apple Store or Google Play Store. And text the studio directly, all from the Civic Media app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back to Mino and the Mayor here on 97.9 FM WGBW, 98.3 FM WISS, and of course the Civic Media app. Beautiful morning out there. 34 in Green Bay, 37 in Appleton, 37 in Oshkosh. Thanks for Caitlin and Nick joining us. Talk about the Green Bay Film Festival this weekend, which is going to be a lot of fun at the Tarleton. Great thing. This segment brought to you by Midwest Restoration. They offer 24/7 emergency services for its clients. Provides a full range of services for both residential and commercial. Fire damage restoration, water damage, mold remediation, wind and hail damage, along with biohazard cleanup. They will help you like you can't believe if you have any of those problems. Give them a call, 920-MIDWEST, MWRestoration.com. They are great for the community. They help out Habitat for Humanity, the Red Cross, Feeding America, Make-A-Wish, schools and communities. Give them a call if you have those problems. 920-MIDWEST. Joining us right now, a good friend of mine, Dave Daniels, here to talk about a book, Our Father's War, regarding World War II veterans. And Dave can speak of this. You didn't write the whole book. You had a couple of chapters in there, basically, your family members. But you are basically a World War II buff because it played such a role in your family's history. Can you talk a little bit about that, Dave?
Sure. First, I just want to say I'm very humbled to be in the presence of two local legends. It's just great.
Well,
thank you.
Well, thank you.
I'm here too.
Three, actually.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Todd and John. We're glad you're here. This is going to be interesting.
So thank you very much. So, yeah, every family has a history nerd, and I guess I'm the nerd in our family.
Which is great.
It is.
Yeah, and every family has a story. I was very close to my grandpa. I was very fortunate. He made it through the war. And I grew up, you know, basically visiting him in Shawano, Wisconsin. He passed away in 2012 at the age of 93. And that's, I think, where my interest in this history really came from.
Go ahead.
So it was probably about 2 years ago that I was contacted by a gentleman, Chuck Shirek, about he had noticed a post I had done on Facebook about my grandpa's outfit. And he had also known another member of the same battalion. And he reached out to me about writing or helping write a couple chapters in a book. And so it was just over a 2-year process, and this book was just published about a month ago.
Okay, it's great. I mean, it's really big. The guy's somewhere in New Jersey put it out. It's called Our Father's War. But you've got 2 chapters in there. Explain that. And Dave and I have a history here. He contacted me when I was doing, I think it was the NBC 26 Mino Project or HTTV type show, one of them. But anyway, but it was a phenomenal story. Just to sum it up, one of the things they did is they had this tiny little store.
Yeah.
Would you say 10 foot by 12 foot?
6 by 8.
6 by 8.
6 by 8
that,
store.
That he still has in his backyard.
Yeah.
And that's a story in itself. And talk about your uncle. We got a lot to talk about. So I'm just going to set the stage and let you tell the stories of your family's history and the whole thing. It's really interesting.
The book's terrific, but there's pictures of that 6 by 8 restaurant whatever.
Yeah, it's a restaurant basically, 6 by 8 foot.
And they supported a family. Anyway, you're
take
the
guest. It away, Dave.
Yeah, so I'll start with my grandpa. He was, I think, the third man drafted in Brown County in end of 1940. He was inducted in January 1941, spent a year down at Fort Sheridan in Illinois, home on leave December 7th when they heard on the radio that Pearl Harbor was bombed. And he told my grandma, it might be a while before I see you again. Well, it wasn't until July of 1945 that he saw my grandma again.
Wow.
So they went to New York City. He had an anti-aircraft gun on top of a skyscraper in New York City because they thought the Germans were going to bomb New York. Then he went to Iceland, England, landed in Normandy on D-Day +6, went through France, Holland, Belgium, through the Battle of the Bulge.
Can I just say something? You know, a lot of people are like, were you on D-Day on the day of D-Day? It's like, no, I was, you know, plus whatever, whatever. What people don't realize a lot of times, I still think it's one of the most unknown stories in all of World War II, the things right after D-Day, we lost lots more troops in the weeks after D-Day than we did on D-Day, because as soon as they moved inland, they hit the hedgerows. Our intelligence did not know that the Germans had machine guns and heavy weapons hidden in these hedgerows, and these guys would be walking across like a field, and the Germans would open up on them from all sides.
Yeah.
That story is never told. We lost thousands of troops right after D-Day. The guys that survived D-Day, lots of them just got killed then in the next couple of weeks in the hedgerows. And that story is never told. Oh. So I'm sure he went through that part of it, and it's like never talked about it.
Right. And it's a perfect defensive position.
Absolutely
because
perfect.
Of how thick they were. Yeah. So to tie in my grandpa to the Tommy store, my grandma's dad, Conrad Bob or Connie Bob, had this little Tommy store on Main Street in Shawano, which was a really small restaurant.
6 foot by 8 foot.
Yeah, 6. And it had a little exterior structure around it with some additional seating and stuff like that. And because it was started in, you know, the 30s up into the 50s, that supported their family. And so other family members helped out, including my great uncle, who was actually killed on March 13th, 1945. So the 79th anniversary will be next week.
Wow.
So that was the second chapter I did for the book, was on my great uncle Lee. And there are some really cool pictures of Lee standing next to the Tommy store.
Right.
You know, he will have been a teenager at that time helping out. And everyone pitched in. My dad even worked at the Tommy store at one point.
And that supported the family, basically, right?
It did. Yeah. That was their income.
But I people need to know that, read that, learn that. Because, I mean, people complain a little bit today. And, you know, you go back to that. That's amazing. They supported a family with a 6x8 store. And they all pitched in. They all worked hard. So that's a cool part of your story. But even bigger than that is just the service that he.
Yeah. Yeah. And so my dad was really young. He was born in 41. So my grandpa actually went back in June or July of 41 to see my dad after he was born. He had a 3-day pass. That was the last time he saw him until July of 45. So one of the funny stories is my grandma was working at the Tommy store, and my dad comes in as, you know, 4-year-old kid and says, "Mommy, Daddy's home." And my grandma looked at him and said, "What are you doing here?" And in walked my grandpa. Well, my grandma jumped across the counter, and that was it. And 9 months to the day my uncle was born.
No. Right, love that.
Right in the store.
Right. I don't think I'm coming into that store anymore. Tell a little bit about finding that store, reclaiming right. that store.
And sure. How you got it, and how you got it back.
Yeah. That's
yeah. Cool.
Yeah. So the Tommy store was shut down in the mid-50s. Lady bought the interior structure, which is a 6x8 portion, and moved it up to her home on the Wolf River north of Shawano. Well, my grandpa knew this lady and at some point went out to visit her and asked if we could buy that store back from her. And they had used it for a playhouse since the 50s. She agreed, and so we went out and she said, we just put new shingles on, so give us $30 for the shingles and you can have it. So went out with some buddies in a car trailer. Loaded it up, and it's in our backyard now.
That's and when I did this, the cool thing is he showed me some of the stuff they found there then in the floorboards, and there were pennies in that from like 1942, 1943, which is just like, oh my gosh, this might have been some soldier who, right? You know, this was his thing when he came there for you guys. And talk a little bit about your great uncle then, what his experience.
So he is a kid, right? He is 19 years old when he is killed. We have two sons, 17 and 20, and it's really hard to think about what these young kids go through at that age, the amount of responsibility they have, the amount of commitment, and they're naive. And thank goodness they are naive, because anyone in the right mind wouldn't want to go into a situation like that.
Yep.
So Lee was like a dad to my dad, because his dad was off to war too. And in one of the letters that I have from Lee, he talks about sending money back to have my great, great, great grandma buy my dad a panda bear. And he talked about, I'll send the money, but it takes so long to get the money back, you know, and everything else. And then unfortunately he was killed. Yeah. On March 13th, 1945, shortly after crossing into Germany, we have another letter between, my grandma and Lee talking about my grandpa Dick, because they were only about 5 miles away at one point.
Wow.
And they
were brothers.
Brother-in-laws. Yes, okay, brother-in-laws, okay. Yep. The Americans had captured the Ludendorff Bridge at Remagen, you know, the only remaining standing bridge on the Rhine. Yeah.
Yep. And lost a lot of guys doing it.
21
engineers got killed in one
setting. When it collapsed, yep. So my grandpa was there for anti-aircraft protection. Lee was in the 9th Infantry Division, and they were pouring as many soldiers across the bridge as they could. Well, unfortunately, they were very, very close, but they never were able to see each other. And then Lee was killed. And on his last letter home, or I'm sorry, the last letter my grandma sent to Lee, it was returned to her. And on the backside, it was stamped deceased. Oof. So just a really sad story.
Imagine opening up the mailbox and you see that. Jeez. That's incredible. This is great family history. And this is the thing I love about writing books and doing that. It says, I couldn't care less about the General Pattons, the General MacArthurs, the whoever. I love small town kids. It doesn't even have to be a small town. I just like normal kids and telling their stories. I didn't think their stories have ever been told well enough over history. And that's where I try to do a little thing for locally. And this book's great too in that way. But it's great with guys like you, Dave, who takes their own family history and keeps it alive. That's why I try to encourage every time I speak someplace, folks, especially these elderly veterans that we have, or even the Vietnam vets, get their stories. These are family stories, man, for history. So.
And sometimes they're not real free about talking about it. So it takes some time, but I think once they start talking about it, we've heard that they become pretty open about it. And for you to capture that in our father's war, this book, Johnny's read it. I haven't. Where is it? Where do we get it?
Right now it's on Amazon.
Yeah. Amazon.com. That's where mine is too, basically.
Okay. Yeah. There's Kindle. It's like $2.99. The soft cover is $14.99. Yeah. And then there's a hard cover that's come out. So,
but I think so many more people could do this. And especially, I'd love to get, I know that at Appleton West High School, I think it was, there's a teacher there who's just fervently passionate about these kids finding out about your grandpas, finding out about your dads, finding out about your uncles, your great uncles. And actually, I had a lady contact me just recently about one of the guys that's in my most recent book, 50 Strong. And she said, could you encourage him to write his own book with the whole story? She's like, I know you can't, because you had 50 different people, you can't tell. But she said, for our grandkids and our grandkids' grandkids, we want them to know what this guy did. And I think that's so important. That's why I encourage kids a lot of time, or younger people, because they will learn like you can't believe, and to realize that this guy, who's this kindly grandpa, who, whatever, he was a bad Ash when he was 19 years old. Yeah, right. They need to know this.
I couldn't agree more with you. That's one thing that I'd like everyone to just think about a little bit. I'm third generation of a World War II vet, and I'm in my mid-50s. We were blessed that our kids knew my grandpa, their great-grandpa. I really think it's up to all of us just to spend a little bit of time, get that history recorded and wrote down, because these kids, these next generations, need to know the sacrifices that were made for them so that we can have a radio program like this, or we can walk down the street. It's just... it's very, very important.
And, you know, I got to be honest with you. I still, to this day, am startled sometimes when I read about some of the things in the war early on. How we won that war, I mean, the Japanese controlled everything in the Pacific. Germans basically controlled Europe. And here we were, isolationists, basically. We're the 16th ranked military in the world, right behind Romania. And somehow our country came together out of the depths of the Depression and took on two of the biggest superpowers in the history of the world and beat them. Yeah. And you know what it was? It wasn't because of MacArthur and Patton. It's because of people like your great uncle and your grandpa.
On a volunteer basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
What they did. Hey, the other thing I just want to say about your book is, I don't know who did the pictures, but it's good to look at those pictures and just see how young these
kids
are.
I was going to say that. I think that's important.
And another thing is, after reading these other stories, after reading your books, John, you realize that these are just everyday people.
Absolutely.
That did just incredibly amazing things when called upon. And no one wanted to be in that situation, but so many people stood up and answered the call.
They did.
And you know what they did?
They were young. They lied about their age to get in there.
That's crazy. I always talk about this. I'm like, well, what did you do when you came back home? Well, I actually built this house here. I mean, oh, you were a home builder. No, I worked at the mill. I said, I thought you meant you actually built the house. Well, I did, me and my brothers. I mean, how'd you know how to build a house? Well, we just did it.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They're those kind of guys.
That was my grandpa. He built his house when he got
there
home.
There you go. Yep. There's another one. Yes. Well, awesome. Dave Daniels, thank you so much for sharing this stuff with us. Your grandfather, your great uncle, the Tommy store, which is so cool. I would encourage people to get this. Our Father's War, get on Amazon.com. Two stories in there on the Daniels family from Shano and the whole area there. Dave, thank you so much, and thank you for what you do at keeping these stories and this heritage alive.
And thank you, guys, and thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks, my friend. Dave Daniels, that was great. We're going to set a quick break. We come back. We're talking about the Brain Center of Green Bay event coming up. Also, the grant from Oshkosh. Mine and the Mayor, back after this.
There have been times in my life I've been wondering why. Still somehow I believe we'd always survive. Now I'm not. There have been times in my life I've been wondering why. Still somehow I believe we'd always survive.
Hey, welcome back. Mine on the Mayor. That was fun, wasn't it?
You know, what a great guy. He works full time, right? He's busy. He's got kids. But to take the time and do a little bit of research, and the stories in here are terrific.
And that's the thing. That's the thing I try to get across to people. You know, he doesn't have to be a general, doesn't have to be a Medal of Honor, doesn't have to be whatever. Those people that raise the right hand and get sent into those situations. And even, like I always say this too, it doesn't matter if you were on Iwo Jima or wherever you were. You know, once you raised your right hand back in those days, it was out of your control. Yeah. You might be sent to, you know, a mess hall in Kansas, or you might be sent to charge the machine guns on Normandy Beach, and they didn't know where they were going. So, I mean, the courage it took, but the way our country came together during that era, and that's why Tom Brokaw, you know, there was kind of a controversy with Tom Brokaw with his Greatest Generation, because then a lot of other people said, well, how great was it? There was discrimination. There was so-and-so, you know, that the world wasn't right. Or the country wasn't right. And that's true. You can't sugarcoat any of those things. But the fact that somehow this country, which was so divided in many ways, and so many people were isolationists, and we put no money into our military, none, because we're in the middle of the Depression, and there were bread lines and soup lines, and we went from that to take on two countries, especially Germany with their industrial might, and everything, who'd been planning for war since 1933 when Hitler took over, and Japan, which had been preparing for this and already in China and in places ingrained in the South Pacific. And here we were so far behind them.
Yeah.
Our Navy was at its butt kicked in Pearl Harbor, obviously. And now somehow they came together between industry and business and the local guys like Dave's great uncle and his grandpa. And somehow we knocked off both of those super mega powers.
Right.
Unbelievable. Wow. And his kids, and like I said, it's like the 32nd Division, the Red Arrow Division, which is the National Guard unit from around here. They were sent to New Guinea, which was the Alamo, basically, because if we lost that battle, the Japanese were going to Australia. If they controlled Australia, we weren't going to do anything in the South Pacific. And these kids that were making $1 every time they would show up for drill at the National Guard armories in New London and Okano Falls and Oconto and Green Bay and all these, and the UP, all these small towns. And it's like, you know, there's this one book I had on the history of the 32nd Division. And it listed in the back, it was like their history, okay? And it listed all the different units and where their headquarters were. And one was Marquette, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading it, and there's these guys that I knew from when I was growing up. It's like, oh, my God, he was there? Then this other guy's like, oh, my gosh, he owned the Olympia Bar where I used to go to. And the other one was one of my teammates' dads. And they fought New Guinea, which was such an unbelievably tough place to fight with the diseases, the malaria, the yellow fever, the dengue fever, all kinds of things. And they somehow won that against the Imperial Japanese. It's incredible what they did. I never felt like they got enough. But again, forget the superiors. It was the grunts that got this done.
And I think that's really important that, and I'm fine with the Greatest Generation. I mean, I don't think that should be that. I think that's what they were,
yeah.
But think about it. And as I said, when, he was here, that was voluntary.
Lines were so long, it was mind-boggling. Yeah.
And then not only do we have to, you know, be grateful for the soldiers, but what about the families back here? I'll see you in 4 years.
4 or 5 years, yeah. Isn't that incredible?
You couldn't get away with that today.
Just incredible.
I mean, would people, I don't know that. I'm just not sure a lot of people would say, okay, that's okay. I'll take care of this for 4 or 5 years.
And for younger people,
right.
Ask your family about their history. When my father died last year, after he died, I realized about his military service.
Absolutely.
I kind of knew that he did some stuff. I didn't know he was in Korea. I didn't know what he faced. I didn't know that he lied on his age to get into the Army.
So
right?
My father-in-law, I mean, those are some great, great stories.
Isn't that incredible?
That kids... And
the stories of
doing...
my grandmother going, I don't want you to go. Like she was trying to hold,
The grandkids can do this research,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
Don't let these stories die. No question. 100%. I encourage that all the time. I got a text. I recently watched Fury on Netflix. This movie depicts the storm they encountered with the Germans on those fence lines. Yeah, it's incredible. One of my guys, Bill Bash, actually the very first person I interviewed for my very first book, was involved with that. I think he was D-Day 6. And he talks about the hedgerows. He said it's like being one of the terms guys used to use, that's a real can of mash, or, you know, one of those terms those old guys always used to use. But he said you'd just be going across and guys would be screaming and yelling and getting shot, and they didn't know where they're getting shot from. And it was just, he said, you'd fall to the ground, you just grit your teeth, you just want to bury yourself in a hole, but you'd have to get up and keep moving. Mm-hmm. And then more guys around you are shot, and they're dead. And then you'd get to the line, it's like, where's my buddy? And he's laying back there shot. And then the next day, you know what you do? You go across another one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. And that story's never been told, I think, on the hedgerows. So, no, I think it's, please, folks. And again, talk to you. There's so many Vietnam vets that haven't talked.
Yeah.
Talk to your kids. Talk to your grandkids. Actually, not the kids. Talk to the grandkids. But you know, one of the things I talked to a guy one time. Why didn't you talk? You know, because I've had this so many times, and I'm not trying to, but I have so many people come up to me and say, thank you for writing that book. I had no idea about my grandpa. I had no idea. You know why? Because they never wanted people to see how they suffered. They never want, because that was a generation of, no, we're fine. Yeah, we're good.
I can handle it.
Don't worry it. And they didn't want their family members sometimes to know how tough it was for them. And they just laugh it off and whatever. And that's why with our Vietnam vets, the Korean vets, we don't have a lot of them left. World War II vets, we got very few. But we're still hoping to have Jack Krasinski from Pulaski. Hope to get him on his 100th birthday.
The other thing that we can learn from this is that I think some people are a little bit woe is me. It's like, read this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you think you got some problems today?
Right?
Yeah.
Or you think life is tough? Read this.
Yeah.
And it's not, the other thing is that it's not that long ago.
No.
I mean, it's our
lifetime, basically.
It is.
Yeah,
it
exactly.
Is.
But you know, another thing, I just read a good book too on Vietnam, this guy that got wounded in Vietnam. And they fought really, really, really hard to save his legs and everything. But he talked about the pain he went through twice a day when they have to change his bandages, and they would, and they gave him no anything.
Right.
And they just, he said he would just, he would either bite through his lip and his lip would be bleeding, or he'd just bury his, because nobody, because you're around all the other wounded guys.
Yeah.
So nobody wanted to cry. Nobody wanted to whatever.
Right.
And they would rip these bandages off. His legs were just mangled. Not use any, would just rip them off. And the skin would come off, and the whatever would come off. It's just, he said the pain, and it was twice a day. And he said you'd start sweating. You'd look at the clock, right, and it's like you start sweating, just dreading what's going to happen. And those guys went through that for years and years. And that nobody knows about that story. You know, it's like what those guys suffered with when they got wounded was pretty incredible. And he said, you know, I watched every war movie there ever was, and a guy got wounded, and they badged him up, and he was joking around, and right, then he was, you know, he's
flirting with the nurse.
Flirting with the nurses.
That's not the way, yeah, I know.
He said you didn't see guys just lying in their bunks crying because of the pain they were in.
Right.
So, anyway, got texts are great show, very interesting. Love the history of veterans and the local events. Thank you.
And
our pleasure. That's what we do.
Yeah.
This is cool. We're going to keep doing it. Now we're going to fight Todd's parking ticket.
That, we're going to do that, too.
We do all those things. That's another one on our list. We got to set a quick break. Once again, when we come back, we'll have Kelsey O'Donnell-Mothy, the Brain Center of Green Bay event that's coming up, which is a really cool thing. And then we got Joe Furlow from the Grand in Oshkosh, which is a very cool place. Might on the Mayor, back after this.